Welcome at Planetary Health Talks, the podcast in which we invite professionals and enthusiasts in the field of planetary health. We discuss its importance, interconnectedness, and application in our everyday lives. This podcast is presented to you by the Knowledge Center Global Health, hosted by Ashish Brahma, that's me, and co-hosted by
Renee Robbers, that's me.
Planetary Health Talks, I'm Ashish Brahma, your host, and today we have the lovely co-presenter, Renee Robbers.
Hello.
Tessa, as our sound specialist, and we're honored to have in our studio Dr. Hugo Tau. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Hugo, who is Hugo Tau?
Well, still developing, but at the moment, very interested in where the world is heading and eager to learn about the impact of climate on our health. Yeah.
So the Knowledge Center Global Health is the one sponsoring us, and we're looking in ways to share knowledge, to understand what's happening to the planet. But it's not your first choice profession to be into environmental health or planetary health, because you have another job.
Yeah, I work in the ICU here in Nijmegen, the Netherlands. And I like the complexity of different diseases and how they interact and how the organs communicate and interact. And it's a very demanding and interesting job in which we work alongside with the organ specialists. So I think an ICU physician is a generalist, so knows a little bit about a lot of things. So maybe that's also an explanation why I'm interested in this topic.
Well, you're making your own bridge. So what's the definition of planetary health, Hugo?
Well, I think it's the interaction between our environment and our health, in which we try to lower the climate impact and the biodiversity loss to ensure that we will be healthy in the long run. And on the other hand, trying to adapt and put in measures so we can actually help the patient that will be coming to the hospital, since the temperatures are already rising. So we have to adapt as well.
Prepare, adapt. Yep. And how are you related to this planetary health? You just made a beautiful metaphor for how do you see the intensive care doctor. But perhaps the world requires an intensive care doctor to take care of the planetary systems where different disciplines come together from a transdisciplinary approach.
Yeah, well, it's definitely an emergency. So we should act like it is an emergency. I do not see any signs that we are actually doing that. And while working in the ICU, I realized two things. we care so much about life.
That's wonderful. Luckily we do.
Yeah,
as doctors, that's what we share. Me from public health perspective, you from intensive. We care a lot about life.
We care a lot.
We care a lot.
Yeah, so we do. To give you an example, I used to work in Amsterdam, and if a homeless person would get a heart attack and we would perform CPR on the street, two ambulances would rush in and would take over and bring the patient into the ICU.
Yes.
And I've actually seen that man coming in. And afterwards, when we succeeded in saving his life, there's no real aftercare. So he's basically sent off to the streets again.
Painful.
It is very painful. And that's what I like to bring, that we take some of the caring about life in the ICU, well, treating it as an emergency, to bring it to the actual drivers of public health, planetary health, and try to to bring some of the attention we spend in the ICU to the actual drivers of health on the long run. So that's my interest.
So before we come to that complex issue of planetary health, I am sure you use a certain model, you have an inspiration, somebody using a model which we can share on our Knowledge Center Global Health.
Yeah.
What model do you use to analyze, to interrogate, to explore and understand the complexity of planetary health?
Yeah, so there are two textbooks already been published, and Sam Myers is one of the authors of the books written in Harvard mainly. And he uses a very elegant model of the drivers and
the action. Explain. Take the mic.
Well, I come from the end perspective, that where I see people coming in the hospital in the future due to malnutrition, infectious disease, non-communicable diseases, but also displacement and conflict and mental health issues. So these actual illnesses or that make us sick, they will come to our hospital. So and then this model helps you to go deeper and deeper and deeper until you get to the root causes.
And walk from the back end to the front end.
Yeah.
So what's the front end, Hugo?
Well, the main drivers he names are consumption, demographic shifts, and technology.
So in demographics, right? What's happening in the planet for those viewers that we have who are not as well versed as you are?
I think the population quadrupled the last couple of decades. So that's a real increase. And at the same time, there are some positive numbers, like the amount of children that are born per person diminishes, and it goes down with welfare.
Female education, welfare. I would say it's the women that make the wise decisions. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and we get older and older. So that's the two main.
There's a couple of trends, and in consumption, and there's a question I would like to ask you later. But what do we do about the Chinese and the Indians, totaling 2.5 billion people?
Yeah,
they want the same standard as Hugo and I have.
That's totally logical that they want that, and I think we should carry the discomfort of having less, because we function beyond the limits of our planet.
Mm-hmm.
The main challenge is how we lower our consumption or be more sustainable, circular economy, etc. So the consumption is the main driver.
Yeah, because of that consumption, we see climate change, we see change in biodiversity, we see global pollution, altered biochemical cycles. We see there's issues with diversity, issues with land use and land cover changes, which creates war and conflict and migration. And finally, we have resource scarcity.
Yeah.
We always talk about Tesla being a beautiful car. Where are you going to find your lithium and coltan when we go from 6.6 million cars to 600 million?
Yeah.
These are impossible solutions. But you say we need to share the discomfort.
Yeah, or carry it like a person. So, cycling to the studio, I thought, well, why not wear a shorts in wintertime? And like the metaphor resembles a couple of things that we need to do. Because it's half the pants you would normally buy. It creates discomfort because it's colder. I think it's a metaphor of where the solutions might be. So, turn down the heater or consume less, travel less.
We're still in the middle of the model of Myers, right? So it's for people to understand. There's so many levels to the proximate causes: air quality, food, infectious disease, access to fresh water, and natural hazards. That leads to a whole different. As I tried to describe it earlier when I interviewed Renee, is that we have all different realms, right? We have technology, we have science, we have medicine, we have governance, we have law, we have finance. And all these things are like filters we need to use to change to a better place.
Yeah.
Because where we're heading towards is what? If we go on this way that we're doing right now?
The disaster. Yeah.
Yeah, Renee, you have a question? Cool. No, a catastrophe. Cool.
Yeah,
we're going to have malnutrition, new infectious disease. As you were summing up, non-communicable disease, we're going to have displacement and conflict, which I've unfortunately seen a lot of myself.
Yeah.
And we have fights in Holland, over 190,000 people coming here. Well, wait, just wait and see what's going to happen.
And I puzzle how to make these like facts fit into a message that will actually change some people's behavior. For example, when we talk about temperature, maybe 3 degrees is not that much to your to your senses. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But if you maybe you connect it with, well, if we continue burning fossil fuels in the rate we do now, we will be in 2100, we will be having a 3 degree Celsius temperature rise, which goes alongside with a biodiversity loss of a quarter. So the quarter of our plants and living creatures will go just
forever.
Just the temperature goes up. And so maybe that helps to comprehend the complexity of all these drivers that are interconnected, and which actually shows how big the problem is. Because, and it goes on and on and on.
This recording is on the 8th of November, 2022. We're having United States elections. And it seems that the Republicans are going to win, who don't believe in climate change by and large.
Yeah.
How can we have this bright light, your inspiration to many people? How can you tell your story in such a way that it resonates, that we think about the seven generations behind us and in front of us, who we're leaving a debased planet?
Yeah.
How do you make that massive transformation in the mind? How do we do that, Hugo?
I honestly think don't think we already... No, so that's what I wanted to stress. It's not my field of expertise, and I'm as a doctor, I'm willing to just step back and to let the actual experts talk about this problem. So it would be like, it was in the English expression like shifting gears, or that I would be advising about how to influence behavioral. So that I hope you will invite a behavioral scientist, and I'll be.
Here's the plan.
Yeah, and I'll be listening. Because the things I learned the last couple of weeks makes me realize that are actually the most important. Scientists, because I think there is already a lot of evidence, and the question you raise, like how is this message formulated? I think that's the biggest.
It's key. You know, in the past, we used to sit by the campfire, and people would share their experience of the past to the youth, future generations. I think we've lost that. At the same time, TikTok is a wonderful phenomenon. People do tend to look endlessly at TikTok. They look at Instagram. They even look, older people like me, into Twitter or LinkedIn. So there is an opportunity via social media, Vimeo, you name it, to share. Even this podcast may help. But my question to you is, if you have come to the realization that as a doctor, there is not a wish for you to solve the issue of planetary health, how do you make a difference? Because I know you're having initiatives that are wonderful.
Yeah, I think education is a very important topic to raise the future generation with the knowledge about these drivers, about planetary health, and teach them actually the paradigm shift that it requires to look at the world. That would make a big difference. And this year we started like an elective that students could choose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we broadcast the lectures on YouTube so that they would be available to anyone. And from there we implemented planetary health into the medical
curriculum.
Not as I think that's an important one, because when we started talking to the head of the department, they were like, yeah, but which part of the curriculum is going to fade away? And that's a difficult one. And we proposed planetary health as a frame in which all the rest of the teachings are brought into. So that really helped. So that is not replacing something, because that's always difficult, but now it's been introduced in the first weeks to the students and trying to give them a mindset. And then from there we will.
So if I want to see this, what do I go to on YouTube?
Yeah, it's called Planetary Health Radboud. It's a channel, and I think it has almost 20 lectures on planetary health, and most of them are not doctors. So again, this is an interdisciplinary...
Humble cake for us doctors, right?
Yeah, we should take a step back and let the experts work this out. And most of the books, like for example, Greta Thunberg, stresses that the best thing you can do is educate yourself and read upon these topics, because there's already so much to discover. And to be honest, it's not an easy topic. So it sits on me for how you, yeah. So yeah, but on the other hand, it gives hope and a perspective to change and to do a little. And there are definitely a lot of positive things. For example, how we think about consuming animal food, or to the shift to more plant-based diet. That would make a real, real difference.
We're in 15 minutes, and as our youthful listeners like to know where we're going, probably we're going to have another half hour of discussion. Maybe it's shorter, but we're aiming for 45 minutes of beauty, because Hugo is on a roll, and I haven't heard my lovely Renee yet. But maybe you have a question, chime in. You're the voice. We're looking for your voice. No question for us now?
No, for now, no. I'm just really listening. Yeah.
So Hugo, these 20 lectures, right? What I find hard to fathom is it takes 10 years to change the medical curriculum. And you have to find with a trick, like a trickster almost, to create this elective. While in my mind, there is nothing more important than planetary health.
Yeah.
So that gives a little bit of cringe in my heart. You know, the one, the opportunities and the opportunism and beauty. Yeah. On the other hand, that old boys network that is not willing to change.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it?
Well, yesterday there was a KNAW meeting about...
What is the KNAW? Because not everybody, nobody knows. It's a Royal Dutch Academic for Science.
Yeah. In the center of Amsterdam, very old building.
People or old building?
Both. But it really felt like a historical point in time, that these people were all in this meeting to discuss planetary health, and the urgency was not discussed. So we were all on the same page.
Okay.
That it's
positive, right?
That's very positive.
Mm-hmm.
And we were discussing, like, is research the right direction, or should we take more action immediately? So then, and everything was discussed about the funding of the research and how we used to collaborate, like every hospital or every university mainly by itself. And I tried to start with the end in mind. So what do we need to save the planet and to go from there? So yeah, it was very inspiring meeting. And I think we will hear a lot about in next couple of months. And what I also find very hopeful is that the last couple of years I was active in, like, the sustainability of healthcare to make our healthcare more
in Dutch,
sustainable.
Groene Zorg Allianz, Green Care Alliance.
Yeah, then they're doing a great job. And where was I going?
Confusing you. That's why you got lost track of. Yeah. You're and, involved oh, yeah, in yeah. sustainable yeah. sustainability.
And I used to go I was invited for talks and gave this presentation, and I used to like stress the importance, and I was prepared on taking questions like, well, is it really a problem? Because we can swim in rivers, and 20 years ago we couldn't. So, and there is a wolf now on the Veluwe. So, well, how about biodiversity? It's getting better, right? So I was used to be prepared to answer those kind of questions, which surprised me in the first hand. But now, like after a couple of dias, people are like, yeah, we know the problem. What are we going to do? And I remembered this meeting. I was like, wow, this is really helpful. And they were like, but if we want to reduce 50% of the CO2, that's a very ambitious goal. How are we going to do that? So that's a change of mind or a change in the score. Yeah.
But that is really a big realization that you're actually there. And I lecture a lot myself. And I know that when you're asked a question, sometimes you prepare for the things you could prepare for. And sometimes you need to think about what you're really talking about. So I'm happy to hear you had the insight. It's not about analyzing the problem, but actually coming with a solution. I think that's what Greta does a lot. And a lot of people in the planetary health movement are far ahead in seeing. And get people to follow those big steps is also hard. And we were talking earlier about how hard it is for people to change their behavior. I actually was walking in a short recently, so I was just laughing when you made that comment. And I will wear them more often just to...
Yeah, maybe you inspired me because I remember seeing you walk in a short.
Share the discomfort, perhaps, yes. Maybe that's it. But helping, I mean, I talked earlier about those seven generations before and after us. That what inspired me is that I know a lot of Lakota Native Americans, and they always tell this, there's no owner to land. We need to take care of it together. We are dependent on the planet, which we don't want to understand. Yeah. And those are fundamental mind shifts that our youth may actually be ahead of us.
Yeah.
Maybe they can teach us.
Yeah. Yeah, we should... listen to them, and yes, definitely.
Two ears and one mouth, right?
Yeah.
I'll be and quiet.
I think the planetary health advocates for a paradigm shift, and I think the main thing that we'll have to shift is that we do not live in a human-centered world. We are actually part of nature and are as important as all other beings, since our health and well-being is essentially dependent on the health of the planet. So that's also the definition of planetary health in my perspective. So from human-centered worldview, we have to go to an eco-centered worldview, mm-hmm. in which humans are like in a circle with all other beings. And you mentioned the polders, right? I looked it up. The polder means the reclaimed land. So it shows how our human-centered worlds, like we, the Earth took this land from us, and now
we're coming to reclaim it.
And if you walk here in Nijmegen, you go to the Ooypolder.
Yeah.
There's a sign which says "Welcome in nature."
It's a paradigm shift required.
Yeah. So if you cross the bridge into the polar, then you will enter
human nature.
Yeah, human nature or nature. Yeah. So to realize that we actually are nature, and maybe we lose some right wing listeners at this point, but I think it's really important to understand, and that's you might call it existential crisis. So at the end, it is about what we want to be as humans, since we are still developing, like you are, like I am, and what country or world we want to give to the next generations. That's, I think that's the biggest task we have at the moment.
Yeah, I'd like to veer towards politics. We have COP27 going on in Sharm el-Sheikh.
Yeah.
You've been there probably, diving. I've been close by Dahab 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It was wonderful. But in a country where human rights are not respected, we are having a COP27. In a country where we have no rights at all for laborers, we have a World Cup of football. It seems that money talks and bad behavior walks, whatever. So I'm looking at COP27, and I don't want to be negative, so I want to quote some things that are positive. The number of electrical vehicles has gone up twice over the last year to 6.6 million. We have a growth of the global renewable capacity of 8%, which is 300 gigawatts, which is equal to 225 million people, houses for people, I suppose in the West, not Indian houses. We forecast that there's a lot of investment in sustainable energy, sustainable planet. Yeah. And yet, when I look at COP27, I see people not coming. I see people talking. I am known to have absolutely no patience for big issues. How do you look at it? Because you seem to be a patient guy.
Thanks. I work hard to
fake it.
To present that way. No, I'm in a good mood today. But if you look very specific to the points you brought in, like the amount of electric cars that are being sold is not a good parameter to see where we're going. Because to me, it shows the human way of solving problems, like creating a new one. And these grondstoffen are still
lithium and coltan are actually found in Congo and actually are owned by China. We don't want dependency on China, and which we'll get.
Same with solar panels. It buys us time to find a real solution.
Or is it? It buys us time to ignore the problem.
This is also a good way of putting it.
Well, yours is more positive.
But it's also practical, because if we do not have time to do it differently. So, for example, nuclear power, I think, is actually very much needed to buy us time. To solve the real problem of our addiction to consuming energy. But we do not have time to solve that addiction before it's too late. So we have to take drastic measures to build these power plants and to make them resembling to intensive care medicine. That's what we do. We buy time, put people on a ventilator.
Yes.
So the antibiotics can do their work. That takes a little bit of time. So, we should take those measures. And at the same time, think about the solutions on the long run.
The planet on a ventilator, I'm looking at it. It has to be a very big ventilator, Hugo.
Yeah.
Again, visiting COP27. I don't want to cop out and say nothing is happening there.
No.
A lot is about making choices. And we all know that you have to pay for things. And the whole theme of this COP27 for me right now is talking about who's going to pay the bill.
Yeah. Yeah. And how's our solidarity with the countries that are not causing the climate crisis or the biodiversity crisis, but are actually facing the consequences of malnutrition and those factors we've already named.
Well, in Meyer's model, we also talk about this natural hazards and people running for cover.
Yeah.
We have 190,000 people entering Holland. Yeah. Everybody's crying.
Yeah.
It's going to be more.
Yeah. Yesterday, I learned that due to these extreme weather conditions, also armoede.
Poverty.
Yeah, poverty is increased because these disasters ruin people's villages, mm-hmm. live those mm-hmm. lives, and do not have the reserves to build it up again. So you people are left in poverty. And then that conclusion, I did not know. And it goes to 100 million of people that are left in poverty when we are heading to 1.5 degree Celsius temperature rise.
Oh, this is historical, Hugo. I'm thinking about India, where you have this these hybrid seeds, right? So you plant the seeds, you have to buy them, but they're fertile once. They don't they're manipulated. So you have to buy the seeds again. If you have a failed crop, you don't have money.
Yeah.
So you forfeit your land. And once you forfeited your land, you're actually a bonded laborer. So in India, there's tens of millions of people who have a land, who have still, in those conditions, poor people, lots of children. They don't have enough land to live off, and they have a debt. And basically, it's modern slavery. So, yeah. And with the climate change on top of that, we're going to have less production in those fields.
Yeah.
Even in Punjab, they used to grow grains. Now they're growing rice. Yeah. It's a global nightmare.
Yeah.
It's a global nightmare, what's happening. And it doesn't seem that we want to wake up.
No.
And I want to go in a different direction. If COP27 will give us solutions, I'm grateful. But I like the activists, Extinction Rebellion.
Mm.
I like your activism, you know, raising awareness amongst people. What would you recommend to your children or mine, who are 9 and 12, especially my 12-year-old daughter, is very aware of what's happening in this planet? How do we stimulate them to be law-abiding yet useful citizens who make a difference, who have that paradigm shift? How will we do that?
Yeah. I come from Radboud University, and we have the slogan is, we need you.
You need me?
You are needed. Yeah, of course. You are needed. And all these curricula are pointed towards making impact. And I think a lot of students actually want to make impact. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the young generation is more aware of these problems. And it's very often that students approach me for research periods.
Programs, yeah.
Yeah. Because they learn that 50% of the CO2 has to be reduced, and they want to learn how are we going to do it, and they mm-hmm. want to be part of the transition. I think to raise children to be nieuwsgierig.
They're very curious is the word. No,
yeah, and they'll find out, and maybe it's in biology or maybe it's in law. This weekend I watched the documentary on the Urgenda case, which is very, very inspiring.
Same, but for those non-Dutch, what does Urgenda stand for? It's an interesting concept about activism.
Yeah,
So what is Urgenda in short?
Yeah, to use law for revolution. I think that's the book of the main lawyer, which I do not remember his name, but and it's so inspiring how you see him and his wife working alongside publishing the book, making a movement, which is also very necessary for planetary health. And they work alongside with a team of 5 or 6 competing Shell and asking them to lower their CO2 emissions. And at the end, they succeed, like many of us already knew. But it's, yeah, so from many perspectives, you can commit yourself to these challenges. So from an economic point of view, from a biological point of view, law, health, yeah. So I think there's a lot to do. And again, if you look back to the model of Sam Myers, I'm sure you'll find something that resonates with the nieuwsgierigheid.
The curiosity. we've passed the 30-minute mark.
Okay.
We still have a couple of minutes more, and there's some themes that I haven't asked you about yet, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk about what you want to talk about. Maybe you want to ask me or René a question, and it's all welcome.
Yeah.
But I want to drop one term, that is degrowth.
Mm.
Can you explain what that means to you, degrowth?
Yeah, it's an answer to the lowering of our consumption. It tells us to step down in buying things for the long run. I think it helps. And I like to use the words purpose for economy, like in a case Klomp is a.
What is spurpose?
Purpose, not well.
Oh, purpose. Sorry.
Purpose. Yeah, to perform what you want to do with your company to contribute to society, not to raise money, but
Patagonia did.
Yeah.
Long-term solution,
yeah,
clothes.
Yeah.
Selling the company, yeah, making sure that the people who provide the.
Yeah.
Clothes are actually paid properly.
Yeah. So we're not selling chocolates to make money, but we're making chocolates to accommodate people a working place to share values and
sounds beautiful purpose.
Yeah. So that resonates more than degrowth because that's so harsh.
Negatively defined.
So to make more impact goes along with less growth, but that's coincidence that they come along. So if you focus on making impact, the degrowth goes along with it.
Okay, so we see a capitalistic system which is based on growth and creating consumerism demand. So, you know, I understand that you have to put a dichotomy up, you know, this growth and degrowth. Maybe perhaps we should call it a circular economy where we focus more on keeping things not sustainable but thrivable. And sustainable is keeping things in balance.
Yeah.
And we need to improve.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
We have to thrive as a unit of people.
Go ahead. I think the main question, and maybe that's a question to you, what do we want to sustain?
I don't want to sustain nothing. I want everything to change. I want people to be aware and awake that what we're doing is woke, or as we call it, not good.
Yeah.
We are hurting this planet every day.
Yeah.
And what I see as a forensic doctor is people being abused, people in pain hurting other people.
Yeah.
And why that is, in Vedanta we say, ignorance is the root of all evil. Why do I like teaching? Why do I like interviewing? Because I learn and because I can share the message that it is for us to connect to people on this planet.
Yeah.
So I don't like sustainability at all.
No.
I think it's an outdated term. We should thrive, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's I had in this interview with you, I'm thriving, I'm learning, I'm appreciating. Yeah. I'm going to read the book of Mr. Myers. I'm going to get Greta Thunberg's book, which I only heard about yesterday, and I'll read it from cover to cover. I want to be inspired by the youth.
Yeah.
I want to be inspired by the old scholars. And I want people to stop talking about sustainability.
Yeah.
There's nothing to sustain.
Yeah.
We have to be humble in front of this planet.
I actually also have a question for you, Hugo, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because earlier you said that doctors have to take a step back. And I was wondering why you would say that, because you said we should let the experts speak, right? And because I always thought that planetary health is a transdisciplinary field. Yeah. When are you an expert? And because I also feel like that doctors are very important in the whole planetary health field.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we are most important as advocates because we are maybe good at informing our patients or the public about these health effects that are coming toward us. And but if you look at the model, all these factors, healthcare is not that important. And and that's what I learned, the sustainability movement within healthcare. Like in the Netherlands, 7% of the CO2 emissions are from healthcare, so that's a big chunk. Within the world, it's less than 5%, so that makes it already a little bit less. And within healthcare, chemicals, including medicine, our buildings, and the way we transport to the hospital are the main drivers, next to disposables and reusables in healthcare. And so these specific topics within healthcare are also covered in different specialties, like mobility or energy transition. So therefore, that's my that I'd like to stress, like it's not specifically a medical challenge. What is a challenge is to look at healthcare from this planetary health perspective, because if, like I mentioned, we shift to a eco-centered worldview, how about these intensive care treatments for people that have multiple diseases and have only a few years left? How about that? And should we not be focusing on the drivers? We already mentioned poverty. People that live in poverty die 6 years earlier and have lived 15 years with comorbidities.
Longer.
Yeah.
It's painful.
Yeah.
We see an opportunity to connect again and to share. We have seen a very good society as Holland, where we actually have the very large divide between the haves and the haves not. Don't have to be a Marxist to see it. The reality is that somebody who is from a poorer economical background will live 6 to 7 years shorter and will have 15 years more of chronic disease. That is not explainable to me, especially not when the gap is increasing. This is what I think sustainability thinking leads to. What we need is to shift to thrivability.
We should share the wealth more even.
And wear more shorts, apparently.
Maybe we could start a movement. So the complexity makes it interesting to look at and makes it also difficult for people to comprehend or to build on some actions and to share maybe something you can do tomorrow is what you can call vote with your fork. So what we eat makes a lot of difference. And to give you some numbers, in the Netherlands, 2/3 of the land is used for agriculture. So try to sink it in.
I know all about it.
Okay. Yeah,
but slaughterhouses.
To the listeners,
yes,
maybe.
Yes, no, it's not new, but it's beautiful.
And almost 72% of that land is used to make food for the animals
that we eat.
Yeah. So half of the Netherlands is used to produce food for animals that we eat.
And we do that in monoculture?
Yes, we love to do that.
We love monoculture.
Yeah.
That's very sustainable.
Yeah.
Now, without being a cynic, it has brought us wealth, agriculture in the Netherlands, but it also is a tricky one. That how do you, once you've sponsored people for 50, 60 years to actually develop agriculture and to develop this chicken and pig and beef and how do you change?
Yeah, well, they've been steered that way by banks and by the government to grow and grow and grow, even if they didn't want to. So the message is not that we need less farmers. Possibly we need more farmers that farm in a sustainable way.
Yes, or thrivable.
Yeah, and in Nijmegen you have Bodemzicht, which is a regenerative farm. And Anna and Ricardo are running also an education center. So they like they're farming more farmers for the future. And they farm in a regenerative way, which does not use pesticides or brings something back to the bodem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice, very nice example how it can be done differently. And of this land and animals we produce, the main is exported. So it's not for within the Netherlands. We're one of the biggest exporting countries in the world.
Second biggest on agriculture.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, such a small country. So we need incentives to scale up and to make a level playing field that's interoperable and that we can have faster innovations. So there's lessons learned here in Nijmegen should be spread in the rest of the Netherlands. I have a final question for you from my side. I think we're reaching 45 minutes. I'm exactly sure that maybe you have one more question, but I'll ask you one more question. Coming from a background myself, I'm half Indian, half Dutch, and I like to talk with people around the world. And do you think we do enough of that? Listen to indigenous people, listen to people who do research in India, China. You're laughing.
We should listen. And like the main polluters in the world call themselves frontiers in this sustainability movement or planetary health movement. But we cannot do both. So we cannot emit the most CO2 and call ourselves like leading. So we should watch and see how other people are actually leading us the way that we have to readopt.
Dr. Hugo Touw, René and Tessa, I've had a wonderful conversation. And I always leave a little bit of space. If there's one message you want to take home for the audience, is there anything we've squeezed out of this interview? Anything you want to say or share?
Maybe a hopeful message. Like we have 17 SDGs that we want to proceed, which are also commented on. But to mitigate the climate crisis goes hand in hand with these social development goals that we want to achieve. So it's a win-win situation if we look after our climate and biodiversity, which will help us to live in a livable and more equal world.
Kenniscentrum Global Health was a big sponsor of this show. We're going to make a huge series with Hugo as our first interviewee. I loved the interview. Thank you very much. Tessa, thank you for your beautiful listening and audiography. And René, thank you for being here. Next time you do the interview?
Definitely.
Thank you. I'm Ashish, and I'd like to sign out. Thank you very much for listening.